I just raised it by $100 a month. That's it. Simple as that. On a 100-unit property and created $1.7 million worth of value, just like that. And so that's beautiful. I mean, you gotta love that math. That's fun math to me. It's not one plus one anymore. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. to claim your free course today. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer, and with me is John Stiles. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Todd. It's a great day to be alive.
Every day, man. So we've been doing this apartment series, and we're going to keep on going on it. Today, we're going to talk about value add. Anything you want to start off with outside of this topic? What do you got going on?
Oh, yeah. You know, again, like we talked about last week, things are picking up a little bit in the real estate market here, getting to look a little bit like spring. And in the midst of that,
I still got like 2 feet of snow outside my window on both sides.
Oh, man, you're a little bit further north than I am.
Yeah, and I don't get any sun either. So I got a bunch of trees everywhere. I live in the middle of the woods.
So, well, and that could all change, but I'm just, as far as the real estate market, it's starting to look like spring. But and I'm at the very beginning stages of trying to put together a real estate team.
Okay, cool.
And that's, you know, that's kind of was inspired a little bit by one of your guests a couple weeks back, who was a team leader.
Jeff Cohen.
Yeah, Jeff Cohen. So I've listened to a bunch of his podcasts. You know, I don't think I'm quite ready, but I think, you know, what he said that on the interview, his mistake was not starting a team earlier.
Yeah.
And so I'm just going to be like, well, it doesn't matter that I'm not ready. I'm just going to start it and we'll figure it out as we go.
Well, and John, I think that's great because teams are really valuable. Whether you're the team leader or you're just in the team, teams are really valuable. And I think in real estate, but in anything, why not leverage everybody's efforts and put it together into one profitable business center? That's going to be good for everybody. And I always suggest any new agent. I've had plenty of agents that have asked me, you know, my advice, and I always tell them, look, either find a good brokerage that's going to help you out, but even better than that is find a good team within that brokerage to be a part of, especially when you're first getting started, because you don't have those contacts. And if your team is getting and driving those contacts, that's huge. Even if they're going to take a little bit more of your, I mean, you're going to take a little bit of their commissions, right, by being the team lead. But something, you know, 50% of you know, $5,000 is better than 0% of $0. So
yeah.
So that's I think that's great. I mean, I think it's great for you because you're gonna benefit of it. You're gonna profit off of it. It's gonna help increase your business, and it's also gonna help them out. So
yeah,
that's awesome.
Well, I think it just really fits my personality in the sense that, you know, I've got this kind of CEO level mindset as far as, you know, I've kind of set a vision and I like to see how everything goes together. And I do enjoy the day-to-day nuts and bolts of real estate, but sometimes it's really difficult to focus on both. So yeah. I think by setting up a team, I can, you know, separate the different aspects that are involved and not be just a one person shop to do everything, but I can delegate more and hopefully be much better for it. So
cool. Well, that's awesome. That's exciting. I wish you luck in that. Yeah. Well, cool. I'm going to be kind of excited. I'm going down to Lexington. I'm going to say this week because this will air next week. So going down to Lexington, actually I'll be in Lexington the day that this show airs, and I'm going to be walking 120 unit building that I put under contract down there, 120-ish unit building that I put under contract down there, and doing the due diligence and hopefully coming back a couple days later with some good news. So we'll see. That's what the due diligence is for, to make sure that the deal is actually a solid deal. Of course, we already talked about that. So I've got everything set up to be able to walk that. And then I also, you know, have the deal that we closed on just over a month and a half ago now. So I'll be spending some time over there too, making sure that the whole plan is in place and that we're executing upon it too. So be able to report back to my investors, you know, end of the week, next week or you know, or actually, again, this is next week. So beginning of the week, I'll be able to report them, you know, what's going on and give them hopefully a positive update. So,
yeah. Well, it sounds good. That's exciting.
Yeah. And on this deal, this 120 unit, you know, assuming it goes well, I'm in talks with my securities attorney about doing what's called a SCORE offering. And a SCORE offering is just being able to basically publicly advertise the offering to Minnesota investors and also taking out of state investors, but you can't publicly advertise to them, or if they see something publicly, they just can't invest in it. I have to know them. So we're looking at maybe doing that and putting it on land.mn, our crowdfunding portal that we're getting off the ground as well. So.
Nice. Yeah, we talked about a little bit, you know, in last week's episode.
Yeah.
Those different offerings, and so good. That's neat.
Yeah. So land.mn, there's my plug, land.mn. If anybody in Minnesota, this is only for Minnesota people, but if anybody in Minnesota is looking to do a crowdfund or to be interested in doing a crowdfund where you're raising from accredited and non-accredited investors, I'd love to chat with you so you can reach out for sure if you're interested in that as well. So that's our little plug for land.mn. Okay.
Are you the kind of sales guy for that site, or how many people are involved with that site?
Yeah, so there's three of us involved. We've got our tech guy who's really good at the, you know, at all that tech stuff. He's really good at the blockchain stuff. Just got extremely good mind in that aspect. And then we've got our securities attorney who's got all the legal side down, and then it's me who's got the real estate side down. So I think we've got a pretty good good team. It's now about executing upon our plan. And you know, the problem is we're all doing other things right now, so it's also just have to spend some time on it and focus on it and really get it moving. So
yeah, very good.
Well, cool. Let's dive into today's topic.
Yeah. Yep. So value add, and that's kind of a big buzzword out there. Let's take a moment just to kind of define what exactly is a value add.
Right. As you said, it's the hot topic, and as it should be in my mind, and it, I think value add kind of, people don't think about it as much when the market's down. People don't think about real estate when the market's down, but value add should always be, to me, on your mind. At least where I'm at in my business. Now I can understand and appreciate the turnkey stuff too, I guess. So, but value add means quite simply, we're adding value to that property in order to force appreciation. So you've got two types of appreciation. You got market appreciation, just through emotion and through raised rents and that type of stuff, lower interest rates, that type of stuff, which we've got a lot going on right now. But you also have forced appreciation, and that's value add. And that's doing, let's say, a renovation to the property, makes the property nicer, generates potentially better tenants or paying tenants, potentially increases the rent, potentially decreases expenses. So, or a combination of all of them. So whatever it is, it's not necessarily always just raising rent. It might be just stabilizing the property. Maybe it's sitting at like 70% occupied and you can bring it to 100% occupied or 95% occupied just by doing some repairs. Maybe the rent stays the same, but you've created that value. And maybe the rents are exactly where they should be. You can't do anything about that. And so instead of doing the renovations in order to increase the rents, you're doing certain types of things in order to decrease the expenses. So that's another type of value add. So it's either a combination of all three, or raise rent, raise occupancy, or lower expenses.
Yep. And this kind of ties into some of that, but maybe just having better management routines.
Yeah.
So that, again, that tenants pay, or they pay on time, or that when they're not paying, they are evicted, you know, just those different types of management processes.
Yeah, John, it's really as simple as we're trying to find a problem with that property or an opportunity. We're looking at that property as, is this property running as efficiently as it possibly can? It's like running any business. We want to look for what is wrong with the business and what can we fix to make it better. And that's what you're looking at a value add. You're finding things that are wrong, or things where opportunities are being missed, and you're executing on that business plan.
So all of these different changes typically will convert down to a bottom line, down to your net operating income.
Yep.
So again, because you're either increasing rents or increasing income and or decreasing expenses, again, that's going to be your net operating income. So let's talk for a moment just how that affects the value of the property.
Yeah, so apartment buildings are sold based on the cash flow, based on the income. And so the income, the net operating income, is the as simple as the gross revenue that you're getting. So all the rents, any other fees that you're charging, minus all your expenses. So your taxes, insurance, and repairs and maintenance, and unit turns, management, all that kind of stuff. So that gives you your NOI, your net operating income. And the property is going to be sold based upon that. And so we sell on, you know, cap rates, essentially. There's other things that play into it, but on a simple level, we sell on cap rates. So let's just say the market is at a 7 cap. If you can raise that NOI by, you know, I don't have a calculator, but if you could raise that NOI by
$100,000,
you know, you're now increasing your equity by the value of the building by, what's that, maybe 1.6 million off the top of my head, somewhere on there.
So, I'm trying to do the math, but that's what we do on the fly here.
Yeah. I mean, so that, you know, if you're increasing your
1.4 million.
1.4. Okay. So I was off a little bit, but, you know, so for example, you got a purchase price of $5 million, right? Your NOI is $350,000. Your building's at a 7 cap. Let's say it's a 100-unit building. You can raise that by $100 per unit per month. Okay. So that gives you, on, let's just do a simple low level, you know, we're not increasing our expenses. That gives you an extra $120,000, right? So now your NOI from 350 is 470. Okay. So assuming that you can still sell it at a 7 cap, and let's just assume you didn't put any money into it, because then we complicate things. But assuming we can still sell it at a 7 cap, now your building's worth $1.7 million more. So it's worth $6.7 million versus $5 million. So you just, not only did you create another $120,000 in your pocket every single year, but you also created $1.7 million in equity. Now, again, likely you put some money into it, so you probably did some renovations. So what? Let's say you put five grand a unit into it. That's 500,000. You still made 1.2 million in equity. Plus, again, for that 500 grand, you increased it 120,000. Now, if you can finance some of that, you really blew up your ROI. So it's all about, can you increase that value? What I was going to say is, with that, now let's say I bought this property for $5 million. Maybe I even financed the repairs, the $500,000 repair. So I, $5.5 million was my all in. And let's say I got a loan, 75% loan to value. Now, if I increase by 1.7 million, now my loan to value, instead of 75%, again, without doing the math, is probably like 65%. So now I've got even more equity. I could do two things with that equity. I could just sit on it and say, hey, I got more equity. Awesome. I feel really comfortable now if the market does take a downturn that I've got a bunch of equity. Or I could refinance, and I could either max that out if I really wanted to, or I could just bring it up to 70% loan to value. But either way, I could, if I wanted to, and if I felt comfortable with it, I could pull some cash out of that building and now have less money into it, again, increasing my ROI. And if I've got investors, my investors are happy as heck because I give them a check back and they still stay in the deal. At least that's how I do it.
Yeah, great. And one other just comment I was going to add in, that cap rate can vary over time and by market. But if you're in the same market, obviously the building hasn't moved. over time, that cap rate may fluctuate up and down. But in your scenario, it's just held steady at that 7 cap.
Yep. So, you know, and right now we're in a cap environment that's compressed. So like with my underwriting, that's why I have to add value, because what I do is I look at historicals. And if that market right now is selling at a 7 cap and historically it sold at an 8 cap, I'm going to underwrite my exit at an 8 cap. It's just what I'm going to do, because I'm going to assume that we're going to get closer to historicals. Maybe we're not going to bounce all the way back. Maybe we've got this new cap rate and that's where it's at. But what happens if it goes to an 8.25 or an 8.5? Well, then I'm still okay. I'm not making quite as much money, but I'm still okay. So that's the other nice thing about forcing that equity, is all of a sudden you're all in on this deal. But if you don't refinance and you're in at a 9.5 cap and you're going to sell it between a 7 and an 8 cap, you're pretty happy. So.
I don't know if this is a little bit off the wall, but would you say that with a larger building, your cap rate will be more stable versus a smaller building? For example, you can figure out a cap rate for a small 2 to 4 unit building, but people don't really sell them based on cap rates.
Right.
So does that make sense? Are they more stable for the larger building you get?
Yeah. So I would say, 1 to 4 family buildings aren't sold on cap rates, and they're more sold on emotions. Mm-hmm. Now, when you get to the 3 and 4, even a duplex, they are sold a little bit on some financials, but it's lower level financials typically. Typically, you're not dealing with quite as sophisticated of people. Not always. I mean, you're not saying that there's not some smart people buying 1 to 4 families, but you're just dealing with a different level of sophistication a lot of times. And then they're sold a lot on emotion. And people use like a different rule, right? That you hear the 1%, the 2% rule. I mean, people look a lot at that, which I don't like those rules, but that's a whole different subject.
Yeah. Yeah. But even within the apartment realm, comparing like a 20 unit building to a 200 unit building, do you think that you might get more stability with your cap rates over time? Or?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. Again, that's still with the sophistication level. You've got a very sophisticated buyer pool at the 200 unit range, and you've got a mix of sophisticated, non-sophisticated at the 20 unit range, and you've got more stable property at the 200 unit range. So you've got less fluctuation in income. And so, yeah, I would say for the most part, you're right. There's, yeah.
Okay, well, let's go on from the math here for a moment, and that's our favorite part, right? Talk about some.
That's my favorite part. I love looking at that number and the differences and the changes you can make to a property because it's magical. It's compounded, right? If you can change your income by $100 a month, now you just changed your equity. I mean, think about that. We just raised rent by $100 a month on a property. And now I didn't take into some expense changes that would have happened. But I just raised it by $100 a month. That's it. Simple as that. On a 100 unit property and created $1.7 million worth of value just like that. Mm-hmm. And so that's beautiful. I mean, you gotta love that math. Mm-hmm. That's fun math to me. It's not 1 + 1 anymore.
Right.
So
great. Well, let's focus in on one of the value add opportunities. So for example, renovating, doing a large renovation on a property. When you're doing that, what are the different things to consider? How do you decide which renovations to do? How do you decide on the finishes?
Yeah, so that can be a little difficult, right? So you want to understand where the market is. You want to understand where your property is in that market, in that sub-market. So probably the best way to do that is to look at what your competition is doing and understand what you can do. And understand also the desire of the tenants. So are tenants wanting higher-end finishes? Are they wanting better amenities? Or are they not expecting that and they're not going to really pay for it. So you've got to understand where you're at. If you're in a, let's call it a C-class neighborhood, you're going to be able to get by with a lot less than if you're in an A or a B-class neighborhood. So I think the number one thing is to look at what is your competition doing? And if you're working with the third party management, they should be able to help you a lot on that. You can go in and look on as simple as look on like apartments.com and Craigslist and Zillow and stuff and see what the interiors of other apartments are in the area and what the exteriors are. You can go a little higher level, which I would suggest, and doing some secret shopping of apartment buildings, meaning you're going to call up the manager, pretend like you're a tenant interested in renting it. You're going to get a tour. And you're going to see the inside and outside of the building. You're going to see what they're charging for rents and all that kind of stuff. So you can really see what's going on. if you can do that and see the finishes and understand what they're getting, and then you go to a couple other buildings, see their finishes and understand what they're getting, you're going to see where you can be and see the level of finishes. If you go into an apartment and it's been completely renovated, and let's say they're getting $800 a month for rent, and they've got granite countertops, nice brand new cabinets, they've got new flooring, they've got, you know, everything's fresh and new. And then you go to the neighboring property and they're charging $775, but they've got, you know, old carpet, they've got laminate tops, they've got outdated cabinets. Everything's just, you know, maybe not gross and nasty, but everything's just not updated. But they're only getting a $25 rent premium for all those new nice finishes. Is it really worth you doing those new nice finishes if you can only get $25 a month? So you have to really think about that. I would say no, the answer is. So you have to think of what's that return on investment truly look like. Now, if they're only getting $675, $650, and the other person's getting $800, now let's talk. I mean, now, okay, I can do that stuff. How much does it cost? Is it worth it? So you've really got to understand what your market is. I think that's one of the most important things to do, because it's easy to over-improve, and it's also easy to under-improve. And then all of a sudden you did all these, you know, quote unquote improvements, and you would have been better off by just going that little step up that maybe would have cost you a few extra bucks, but not that much. Mm-hmm. So what are tenants liking, John? I mean, should you be doing luxury vinyl planking in the living rooms and kitchens and bathrooms and maybe even into the bedrooms? Or do tenants prefer a carpet? Carpet's going to be cheaper, especially in the short term. Carpet's going to be cheaper. So what do they prefer?
Is there a formula for figuring out your ROI on, you know, dollars spent for improvements versus, you know, monthly increase in rent and what percentage are you shooting for, type of thing?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's as simple as, you know, what's your income versus your expenses. And, you know, I would say it really is going to be investor dependent. But if you can get, you know, 15% on your money, that's pretty solid.
Sure.
If you can get, shoot, 20, 30, 40%, of course, let's do it. If you're going to get 5% on your money, is it really worth doing? Probably not. You know, what's it going to increase that value of the property? Again, if you put 500 grand in the building and it only increases the value by 600 grand, was it really worth it? Probably not, you know?
Yep. And then, obviously, there's going to be some operating costs or renovation expenses that don't increase your rent. Things like the roof or things like the boiler, you know, those are things that you need to plan. They're more along the lines of capital improvements.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, how do you factor those in?
Well, those are the traps, right? Those things are the things that you think, I'm doing this big value add and look at how much money I'm spending, but that could be a big trap because, like you said, it doesn't really increase your NOI. I mean, just by putting a new roof on, nobody cares about that, especially if it's a flat roof and they can't even see it. You know, maybe if it's a pitched roof and the pitched roof is, you know, curled and missing shingles, it'll add a little bit of value on it because the tenants feel safe there. They feel like their roof's not going to leak, but it's still not going to add that much value. So you got to really consider what you're doing. And that's kind of, so there's a difference on the things that are really going to make you money versus the things that are just necessary. Things that are necessary, the seller's pretty much has to take that off the price. Right. So if you've got to do, if you think you can buy that building at a 6 cap and that's whatever, $5 million, but then you have to do a new roof, maybe you have to do new siding, Maybe you have to do some heating, basically like a central or whatever, bunch of heaters and furnaces and stuff like that. And those aren't going to add value. If those aren't going to add value, well, those have to come off the bottom line essentially. You know, so instead of buying it for $5 million, maybe you got to buy it for $4.5 million, something like that. Mm-hmm. So, and maybe some of those add a little bit of value, so you can take that into consideration. Like heating could add some value. You know, if you've got an old furnace or boiler that's at 75% efficiency, and you can put one in that's at 90 or 95%, that's going to save you some money. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to be dollar to dollar.
Right.
So,
speaking of heat, that's kind of another example of not an improvement, but a change of how you operate the building that could potentially add value quite a bit. So getting to the specifics, you know, if currently the owner's paying for the heat, but you can switch it over to the tenant responsibility, then that greatly reduces your expenses.
Yeah, so heat and lights and water, all those things, if you can make the tenants pay for them, or at least pay their ratio of that, then you're gonna not only get payback from the tenants, you're also going to probably get a benefit, because the tenants are going to be a little more aware of what they're using, right? So I had a single family house, for instance, the very first one I had, I paid the heat for my tenant. And every time I'd go there in the middle of January, and we live in Minnesota in January, it can be pretty cold. It'd be, you know, 10 degrees below zero outside. My tenant would have their door and windows open. And because they had the heat crank so hot that you couldn't stand it in the house, so they had to open up the doors and windows. Well, they didn't care, because they weren't paying for that. And that was my first lesson in, you can't just allow your tenants to run free. I mean, especially in like a single family, you shouldn't be paying for that type of stuff. With the multifamily, you might be forced to. If you've got this big central boiler that's heating the whole place, you're going to be forced to. But then if we can do a bill back to the tenants, and they can control it within their unit, now they're going to be a lot more cognizant of it. Maybe not everybody, but most people will be. So that's good. And then, of course, like I said, you're getting that payment. So you're getting money back. And here's the funny thing, and this is my opinion. So it's not this isn't a science. This isn't proven, at least I don't think it is. But I feel like I could charge a tenant, let's say it's a house again, I could charge a tenant $1,500 to live in my house, and I pay all the utilities. But for that same house, I could charge the tenants all the utilities, and I could still probably charge them $1,400 a month. Their utility bill is going to be much more than $100 a month on average. Their utility bill, you know, electric, gas, and water, is probably going to be closer to like $250 a month. So I'm making $150 more a month. And that might be drastic. Maybe it's $100 or $75, but I'm making more a month just by doing that. And I've proven that concept in single family houses by taking the rent and keeping it the same, or even raising the rent slightly and adding in the water, adding in some of the other expenses. So I used to never charge tenants for the water, because it always follows the property. Now I've been doing that on all my single families, and the tenants don't fight it. They just expect it. And that's like in Minneapolis, that's like $75 to $85 a month. So.
Yeah. So that, and the, just so people are aware, the short name for that is RUBS. That stands for, what is that?
Ratio Utility Billing
System.
Yeah. Something like that. But yeah, it's basically a bill back program, and you want to understand what you're doing with that. So, and I don't want to go over it right now with this show. Maybe we'll do that another episode, but it's basically you have to fairly charge back your tenant. You can't just randomly charge them amount just because you feel like it. You have to, it has to be based on a number of things, occupancy, yep, size of the unit, stuff like that. So,
well, I think that's a good lead into another topic on today's show, you know, treating the tenants fairly. And because so far we've been talking a lot about numbers, a lot about money. Because as an investor, that's, you know, that's what makes it worthwhile getting into the investment. But we got to keep in mind that there's people involved in this investment. Regarding the utilities, treating them fairly, you know, it's not that we're taking advantage of them. We're just creating a situation that's similar to the market that they'd expect elsewhere anyways. You know, when we're deciding which level of finish to give them, it's not that we're not giving them something. It's just that, you know, say we're not doing the total decked out finish. Well, maybe they're not expecting that. Maybe they don't want that. Maybe they want just a plain, simple place to live that they can afford.
Yeah. And so that's exactly it. You've got to look at, okay, the decked out apartment is great, right? But if you do that decked out apartment, now you have to justify it, you have to charge $950 a month. Well, for one, you probably can't get it. But two is, even if you could, those tenants don't want to pay that. They don't have that interest in paying that. They would rather go to the property that's just clean and nice and provides them a good, safe place to live for, you know, $750 to $800 a month. They're willing to pay that, and they don't want granite for that price. You know, sure, they'll take it if you'll charge them $800, but you can't, so they don't want it. And same thing with the extra amenities and that kind of stuff. Sure, would they take a nice pool with a great sport court with a bunch of workout facilities and all that kind of stuff? Sure. But if it's going to make them pay $950 a month from rent, they don't want it. So you've got to look at, you know, what types of who your tenants are and what are their wants. Is luxury more important to them, or is price savings more important to them? So like you said, it's all about treating. If you treat your tenants right in this business, you're going to make money. And it's not that you're going to let them take advantage of you and crawl all over you and all that kind of stuff. No, you treat them right. You treat them with respect. You treat them for the people they are, with respect, and they're going to take care of you. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful with jacking up people's rents. You know, people live on budgets, and 78% or whatever it is, live paycheck to paycheck. So a $200 increase in rent is massive for people. So you've got to understand, you're probably going to be displacing people. Is that what you want to do? And is that good for that community? And the answer might be yes. But the answer also might be no. So you've got to really look at that. So,
You know, back when I, was a property manager, I really thought of that role as basically a customer service role. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I had phone conversations with tenants or personal interactions with tenants, you know, sometimes those interactions can be difficult, and some managers let it get to them, and they might, you know, raise their voice or just get all upset or whatever. But I tried to keep in mind, you know, I was never perfect, but try to keep in mind that, you know, these are people that I'm talking to. These are their lives. This is their household. This is where they live. This is their home. So, you know, treating people with respect is really important. In this
business. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, these are people's homes, right? How would you like somebody to come into your home and remodel it? That would be great, right? Until they give you the bill. And they go, give me, you know, here's your bill. You got to pay me an whatever, $500 a month for the next 5 years. You go, whoa, I didn't agree to this. You know, take all that, you know, I don't want the remodeled bathroom anymore. You've got to look at, you know, you got to understand if somebody did it to you, you know, would you want that? And so it's not all about how much money you can make. I mean, definitely that's what you're in business for. But you also have to be cognizant of what you're doing, and you know, you're dealing with other people and other people's lives. So, yeah. One other thing I wanted to talk about too is the amenities and the powerful thing that amenity packages can do for your building and for the building value. So tenants right now, I think more than ever, value amenities, especially in that B class and A class, you know, price range neighborhood, is they really want their amenity packages. Millennials and even older people, they expect a lot. You know, the older generation, they're moving from their houses where they maybe had a pool, or, you know, they had a lot. They had that gym membership all the time. They just had everything because they could afford it. Well, now they want to move into an apartment building, and they're going to choose maybe a B plus or B or even a building. They want amenities. And so if you can provide that, that's going to be, I think, very positive. So what I look for, especially, like I just put an offer in on a B plus class property, and it had a really big size lot, tons of extra space. And I liked that a lot. I thought that was great, because now I can add a lot of amenities, a lot of really good amenities for the tenants. And they're going to attract great tenants, and the tenants are going to be happy too. So it's all about making your tenants happy. And so you got to look for things like that. I was at a gentleman's property, and I think I talked about this already on the podcast, and this guy had everything. I mean, he had this beautiful pool area that had outdoor ping pong. It had, he has a DJ booth, and he has a DJ come on the weekends. And there's three workout gyms. There's a rock climbing wall. There's all kinds of stuff at this. There's a theater. There's people, massage therapists that come. Then they had sport courts. You know, they had like the volleyball court, their pickleball court. They had the dog parks. They had all kinds of stuff, tennis courts. So there's just everything there for these tenants to do. And that really attracted really high quality tenants that love to live there. And it's going to retain his occupancy, you know? So instead of having move out, say, you know, having whatever, 50% of your tenants move out every year, now you're going to have, you know, 35, maybe 40% instead. So that's, you know, big cost savings. Plus he can get better rent for those. His units on the inside weren't that nice. I mean, they weren't anything crazy special. They were nice. They were clean. They had luxury vinyl planking and some nice, you know, high end cabinets, but, you know, nice newer cabinets and countertops. But the bathrooms were just okay. You know, they were kind of blah. And so, I mean, he spent the package on the amenities, but you got to look at it as like a per unit basis. You know, he spent $1 million on these amenities, but he's got a 700 unit building. So that's $1,400 a unit. It wasn't that much. So that's another great thing to really focus on, though, is amenities and what can we provide our tenants, and are they going to, that is that going to increase our occupancy and increase our rents?
Yeah, that's definitely great. And while you're doing all these changes to your building, you know, you do have to do it intentionally. And as far as keeping in mind that you don't want to have too much turnover while you're doing it.
Yeah.
Because the turnover itself can be a huge expense, whether that's just leasing fees or renovation costs in a particular unit, or vacancies. So that's just one other thing to keep in mind. You got to kind of pace yourself with all of this stuff.
Yeah. Right. I mean, if you come in like a bull in a china shop and just start kicking people out or just start remodeling everything without any regard to who your tenants are. And just you're thinking, I'm just going to turn this place as quick as we can. We're going to drive cash flow. Well, you're going to be in for a rude awakening. You're going to get a lot of vacancies and all of a sudden your expenses are going to go through the roof and you might not be able to handle what you did. And it's going to take a long time then, because once you're in the middle of it, guess what? You've got to finish it to start getting that back. And you might get a bad reputation. And so it might take a while. So yeah, you got to be delicate. You got to understand what you're doing. You can't just go like a bull in a china shop and just start plowing through this thing. Outdoor amenities are great. Those are easy to add because those don't disrupt people's lives as much as the indoor, you know, per unit thing.
So. Right. Yep. Very good. Any other comments on this topic of value add?
I would say, you know, when you're, one of the biggest things I think people make mistakes and I make mistakes on is the budgeting. And it's just so easy to lose sight of the budget, think that I can get by with, you know, maybe $5,000 per unit when it really is going to cost you $6,500 per unit or savvy, maybe even $7,000 per unit. So you've got to look at your budget and really think about, can I get this done for that price? And you shouldn't be, oh yeah, I can get it done for this cheap. It should be, this is what types of quotes I've been getting. And then what I would say is that once you get your quotes, add 10% to that and then add another 10% on top of that, just to be safe. So make sure that your oops budget is nice and fluffy. Make sure that you've got plenty. And the more per unit renovation, so let's say you've got a $3,000 unit per unit renovation. Well, you know, can you be off on that? Sure, but you're probably not going to be several thousand dollars per unit off. But if you've got a, let's say a $12,000 per unit renovation, well, that's a big renovation, you know, now you better have a nice fluffy budget there. So make sure you take into consideration that once you start doing a big renovation, you're going to uncover a lot of hidden stuff.
Yep. That's probably one of the biggest challenges in all of this, I would think, is just getting the right contractors and vendors in there to do the right renovations and to accurately price that out. Cause we can always assume we usually assume it's going to be less than it is.
Yeah. It's so easy to do. I've done a lot of renovation, a ton of, I've flipped a lot of houses. I've done a lot of apartment stuff. I've done a lot of renovation. I still make mistakes on my renovation budget. And it's almost never budgeting too much. It's always under budgeting. So it's so easy to make those mistakes. It's just so easy to do. So that's what I'm saying. Add 10%, then another 10%. Because it's easy to think, oh, I can get it done for this price. That makes the numbers work. But try not to make the numbers work. Make sure the deal works. So don't push your numbers. That's what it's easy to do. Especially because there's not a lot of deals out there. So it's easier for people to push their numbers, just try to make a deal work. So
Right.
The last thing I would say is there's different types of value add deals and you got to know and understand what you're capable of and what you're comfortable with. There's that stable value add where, you know, it's cash flowing at 90% plus, or sorry, it's a stable at 90% plus occupancy. Just some rents lower, maybe some high expenses, and you just do some quick turns, you know, and that would be the beginner should be doing that for sure. If you haven't done a lot of renovations, that's, you know, do that, you know, 3,000 to 4,000, maybe 5,000 a unit type turn. Then there's the distress assets, which are, you know, that's great, but those aren't for the faint of heart. If you've got a building with, you know, let's say 70% occupancy and you're putting 10 grand a unit into it, that's not for the faint of heart. You got to be aware and understand what that really means.
That's where it can be really good to have your qualified team that we talked about in previous episodes. work with you on that. It's not really a one person show when it gets to these big buildings.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you've flipped a house, you know, you can do a lot of it on your own, or maybe have the one guy with a truck that comes and does most of the work. But when you're an apartment building, if you're doing a 100-unit apartment building renovation, you've got one guy in a truck. Well, guess what? It's that one guy in a truck is going to be there for 15 years. So you've got to actually build a team and do it right. Make sure your management is under the understanding. I mean, your on-site staff understands what's going on, and your contracting crew understands what's going on. So,
yeah. All right. Well, I think that's a good amount of information for people to chew on.
Absolutely.
So if you enjoyed what you have heard today, go ahead and give this a good review on iTunes, and let us know your comments in Facebook and YouTube. You're going to find us on all those platforms and more by looking up Pillars of Wealth Creation.
Yeah, and we're pretty close to being done with the apartment series. I think I'll add a couple more little things to it. We'll talk about, you know, after you execute the deal, we'll talk about, you know, when to sell and maybe a few other things. But we're going to be basically wrapping up on this. So if anybody has a topic they really want us to cover, you know, send us a message on the Facebook page or even on YouTube, and let us know what you want us to talk about. If you got something, or if you got a question, or whatever, we can definitely try to answer people's questions. So, like I said, we'll probably do this maybe two or three more weeks, but that's about it. And then we're off to bigger and better things.
Sounds like a good plan.
All right. Well, John, you have a great rest of the day, and I will talk to you next week.
You too.
Awesome. Make every day Saturday, man.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.